Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On the front lines of Houston sports.
Let's go!
You're in the trenches with ND Kalu.
Welcome in. Happy Monday to everybody out there in Radio Land. I'm ND Kalu. It's Chris Gordy, Big Sarge of Big Sarge Sports, and Jacob Beck on the other side of the glass, making it happen until 12 noon, talking all things sports with that special, special emphasis on the number one sport in the history of sports, American football. But I've been outvoted. We're not going to spend the majority of the show talking USFL football, even though I feel like that's a pretty good product out there on that field. I might be in the minority, but outside of the offensive linemen, I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Did they win, the Gamblers?
I didn't watch that game.
Some of it. They were playing an 0-5 team, I think, so I hope they won that one.
You pretty much just watch what they give you. And on Sunday, of course, we had the NBA playoffs, and I was spending more time watching that. But you had Birmingham playing Philadelphia. I get what's going on, because it looks bad when you're watching games. There isn't anybody in the stadium. I feel like this was the year that they were just trying to fill things out, make sure the cameras are working, make sure the TV networks are on point. If the USFL survives, and it's going to be tough next year when the XFL is implemented, they're going to have their home teams playing their home cities. But right now, I kind of get what they're doing. But on the field, and I won't spend more than 30 seconds on this, unless you want to call in 713-212-5790 to talk about it. On the field, the only position group where I'm saying to myself they're lacking, and even the best of this position group across the league probably won't get a legit shot at the NFL, the offensive line. It is hard. People forget when they see somebody who's 6'7", 300 pounds, and pretty athletic, oh, he could play offensive line. It's a different animal to be an offensive tackle, offensive guard in the NFL, and you're trying to stop guys who are moving forward while you're backpedaling. It's a different kind of animal, and that's the one position group where I say, you know what? Yeah, there's a noticeable difference. But wide receivers, I see some pretty good wide receivers. Running backs, Bo Scarborough from Alabama. You know, he was playing in the game that I was watching after a few years in the league, bouncing around from team to team. You see the skill position. You see the athleticism, but the offensive line is definitely lacking. All right, unless you want to come in and talk USFL, that's probably the last we're going to talk USFL, unless it comes up organically. How can we not talk about the conference championships being set in the NBA? I will argue that the games that took place on Sunday, the two game sevens, the underdogs, the overall underdogs won those games. Boston beating Milwaukee 109-81. Going to the Eastern Conference, they'll be taking on the Miami Heat. Then you have the Dallas Mavericks. For all you Dallas haters out there, the Dallas Mavericks will beat Phoenix, and they will be taking on Golden State for the Western Conference Championship. So the conference championships are set. This is a good thing for the NBA. I don't know how many people before the season started would have told you the Eastern Conference Championship will be Boston taking on Miami, and in the West it'll be Golden State taking on the Dallas Mavericks. I think this is good for the NBA, similar to the NFL, where you just don't know exactly what's going to take place, who's going to make it to the conference championship.
It is good, and there's a little bit of parity. I mean, the Warriors being in there, it's a friend of mine texted me last night. He goes, yeah, the Warriors are in there, but they're still not the Warriors exactly of a couple years ago. They are beatable. You know, the Dallas storyline is interesting just from a Rockets angle, because the Mavericks bottomed out. You know, they won that title, it was a decade ago now. It feels like it wasn't that long ago. But, you know, they bottomed out. They were searching for their superstar. That draft where Trae Young was there, they traded up with Atlanta to go get Luka at number 3 in 2018. And it's been, you know, ever since they've gotten their superstar. And Luka has taken a step forward in his career every single year. And it's a good model for the Rockets and their rebuild. You know, it was Jalen Green Does his trajectory project to be that superstar, that leader? 4 years from now, are we talking about Jalen Green as one of the best players in the NBA? I think that's a pretty good trajectory, I guess. Different players, different positions, don't get me wrong. But, like, the model, Dallas did it right. They built through the draft. They found some pieces in free agency and all that. But that's what you hope for the Rockets. But, yeah, I mean, the fact we're going to be talking about, and again, like, so many people bring up the LeBron factor. Oh, if LeBron's on it, I'm not watching. I think the TV ratings will be good because Boston has got a nice, you know, contingent fan base across the country. What can you say about the Heat? I mean, like, them being Eric Spoelstra is probably, like, still one of the most underrated coaches in the NBA. But yeah, it's pretty fun to get these matchups, Dallas against Golden State and Boston against Miami.
First of all, good morning.
You're not on.
Jacob, go ahead and pot up Sarge's mic. We'll let him talk today.
All right, while he's figuring that out and while Jacob's figuring that part out, first of all, good call by you. When Dallas won it, it was 2011. So I know Houston Rockets fan aren't saying, oh, you know what, we'll do like Dallas and we'll wait 10 years before we get, or 11 years before we get a chance to play in the championship game or be actual contenders.
This thing
I hope Jalen Green is encouraged by some of these young stars that are carrying their teams, like Trae Young. And I know Atlanta's not in it, obviously, anymore, but Trae Young, the way he carried his team, you talked about Luka, some of these young guys that are now emerging as the stars of their team and making their teams contenders. I hope when Jalen Green's watching, he's thinking to himself, you know what, I can be that guy.
First of all, good morning, everyone. Thank you for turning my mic on, Jacob. I appreciate that. Indy, I didn't wear my Black Forces in here, but I guess I chose violence because I got to come right at you right off the rip. Boston Celtics underdogs? How were they underdogs? Just because the Bucks have Giannis?
Because they're the defending NBA champions. You know, the whole defending NBA champions, and you have the same team returning.
Yeah, but that doesn't make them underdogs, though. Not with that team. Not against the Boston Celtics. If that would have been Trae Young, and the Atlanta Hawks, I would have said, yeah, the Hawks were underdogs. But I had Boston winning that series in six, and they should have won it in six had it not been for two mishaps by Marcus Smart at the end of game four, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that's good that you chose them. That's fine. But underdogs, when you're playing the defending NBA champions and they have the same returning nucleus, yeah, you're expected to win those tournaments.
But they don't, though. I mean,
who are they missing?
Well, they were missing Middleton, for one. Mm-hmm. And so they're missing one of their great defenders in PJ Tucker, who plays for the Miami Heat now. Like, PJ would have been in that game. That game would have been totally different for Jason Tatum. Those last two games would have been totally different for him.
I didn't even check. What were their seeds going into that? It was a 2-3 or 1-2.
Yeah, two,
it was very
two, three.
Close. Yeah. I would expect the NBA final. But anyway, my point is I'm still going to stick by underdogs because they're the defending world champs. So you got to beat the champs to be the champs. Well, and they did it.
And they beat the champs, too. Mm-hmm. And I also came in here this morning to say, we're going to have to go ahead, and I'm pretty sure we'll do this later on in the show, but Giannis got to get some of that heat that James Harden took and some of these other superstars that Chris Paul is taking today. You don't come up short in the second half and only score 8 points in a game seven. Game seven, an elimination game, and you come up with 8 points in the second half. So, yeah, I know we'll get to that. And let me switch over.
It's
really
hard to put him in the same category as James Harden when he finishes the game with 25 points and 20 rebounds.
Yeah.
Like, James Harden shot the ball twice.
And that's what I always say. Stats can be skewed. Like, stats can be skewed. If somebody somebody clicked on the internet and said, wow, Giannis had a great game, 25 points, 20 rebounds. It doesn't say Giannis had 17 points in the first half and finished the game with 25 points. He finished with 25.
Could he have played better down the stretch? Absolutely. But to put him in the same category with how he played in that playoff game with how James Harden played, no.
He choked in the second half, indeed. Like, if we're going to call a spade, mm-hmm. He choked in the second half of the game. He missed layups. He wasn't effective. He became the mark. They started going at him. Like, it was him. Like I said, well, I know we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I want to switch over real quick and say I got to pat myself on the back. Yes, I chose violence this Monday morning. I'm patting myself on the back. Hey, who's Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Who's their head coach?
you hired Jason Kidd?
No, but
like, did you write a letter to Mark Cuban and say, please hire Jason Kidd?
But you remember I got killed a couple of weeks ago when I said that one of the reasons why the L.A. Lakers had the season that they had because they missed one of their very good coaches off that bench in Jason Kidd.
Like, Jason Kidd's a known commodity in the NBA.
But Jason Kidd has been he was a bad head coach before he went to the Lakers, became their assistant coach, and then moved on to Dallas. Like, what he's doing with Dallas right now, a team who hadn't been out of the first round of the playoffs with Luka, and now they're going to the Western Conference Finals. Like, that big turnaround has a lot to do with Jason Kidd. And that's why I was saying, if Jason Kidd would have been on the bench for the Lakers this year as an assistant coach again, the same way he was when they won that bubble championship, they would have been a totally different team, because now you got somebody that Russell Westbrook is actually going to listen to because he's a Hall of Fame superstar point guard. So I feel like that Jason Kidd should get major props for helping turn around that Dallas Mavericks team.
When you look at Dallas, and here we're not disagreeing. I guess the only thing we're disagreeing is the fact that you're trying to take credit for Jason Kidd's success. Like, when I look at the Dallas Mavericks roster, and in an age where you have to have three superstars if you truly want to be a contender, I, along with a lot of people, that's why I'm not going to say, oh, credit me, give him credit for taking a team that has that one superstar in Luka Doncic and then a bunch of very, very good role players in Jalen Brunson, Spencer Dinwiddie, Reggie Bullock. Like, you have guys like that who you're not going to consider them a part of a big three, but Jason Kidd has found a way to create a great team. You know, and let's give the players credit. When you're in a situation, when you're in a league now, this diva league where it's all about having those three big stars, and if I'm not getting the points, if I'm not getting my shots, I demand a trade. To have everybody on that roster buy in, and they know Luka's the man, and everybody else is like, hey, this offense, this team revolves around Luka, and they've accepted that. Yeah, I give Jason Kidd a whole lot of credit, but I think most people in the basketball community have always seen him as a good coach. I don't know if him being an assistant coach with the Lakers would have the type of impact that the Lakers would have been going to, you know, contenders.
Can we take this angle?
Mm-hmm.
Jason Kidd, you know, elite level point guard playing the NBA. Did you see the three leading scorers for the Mavericks this postseason? All guys technically labeled as point guards.
Jalen Brunson was definitely.
Yes, Luka Doncic, Jalen Brunson, and Spencer Dinwiddie. All technically labeled as point guards. I know some of those guys play multiple guard spots, but you know, you could make the argument he's had that effect. Mm-hmm. And Luka was already becoming great. And again, you could maybe even work an angle of who first coached him. Steven Silas, when he was an assistant with the Mavericks.
He put that on him.
But you're seeing an offense that runs through the point guards, and they're getting an elite level play out of all their guards.
No, he should definitely get credit. Quick timeout. We'll continue that talk. But if anybody was killing you on Twitter for giving props to Jason Kidd, then I don't even know why you pay that any mind, because that's just a ridiculous take if they don't understand the impact that Jason Kidd's having with the Dallas Mavericks. 713-212-5790. I'll tell you another high-impact player, Justin Verlander. We'll talk about that in the red-hot Houston Astros. Though their streak may have ended, they're still hot. We'll talk about that and so much more in the trenches, only on Sports Talk 790.
8 Ball will come out hard with the gangster lean. Goes five for the women that be jocking the green. I'm a pimpster.
Welcome in, welcome back in the trenches on this Monday morning. Also the most interactive show in the world, 713-212-5790. It is not anywhere near football season, but Chris and Big Sarge, being the reporters that they are, they had a chance to see some of the Houston Texans up close and personal.
Yeah, the Texans had their rookie mini camp on Friday, and you know, they sent out to the media, okay, we're going to have some availability for you guys to come out, and you'll have a 15-minute window to take pictures and video and all that. So we get out there, and the rookies are just kind of walking out there. You get to see Derek Stingley Jr., you get to see Kenyon Green, you get to see John Mechie and all the rookies, and basically they're just like stretching. They're going through all these drills of stretching and butterflies and just all the calisthenics you'd want to see. And then basically when they're finished that, the coach blows the whistle, not Lovie Smith, whoever the strength coach or whoever, blows the whistle. They all huddle up and they're on the far side of the field. You can't really hear or see what's going on. And then the media have come, folks from the Texans come up and go, all right, thanks guys. Thanks for coming out. We're like, wait a minute. Like,
wait, did y'all interview?
Well, they brought them. So like an hour later, they brought them over to NRG for their and put them at the podium to talk with the rookies. But like, yeah, like we didn't get to see anything. We got to see them stretch and that was it. And I went back on my phone because I'm like, wait, was this a thing from the past? I found on my phone the year they drafted Deshaun Watson. I had all these pictures and videos of Deshaun Watson taking snaps under rookie under center, working with Nick Martin. All these pictures of like drills and stuff they were doing at rookie camp. But we didn't get to see that on Friday. We got to see stretching and, you know, that was it.
I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you, Chris. I don't know what I was expecting. I didn't think that they were going to go. If anything, I just thought that they would go through, hey, this is how we warm up. This is how we prepare. This is how we stretch. This is how we get ready for practice, you know, and maybe I didn't expect them to go through any as far as like defensive, offensive drills only because.
What did we see 2 weeks ago when they were doing just quote unquote voluntary workouts? We saw actual drills. We saw them running plays. We
those
saw them.
The veterans, though. I guess, and I'm not trying to push back on you. I'm just saying I don't know what I expected. And I understand what you're saying. Like, I guess we should have seen more than just Jalen Petrie and Derek Stingley Jr., you know, stretching and talking to each other, maybe running a couple of sprints. I get that. But for me, I guess I just like, nah, because they have OTAs coming up here in the next 2 weeks. I think it starts on the 23rd. And I think that the media is allowed to be out there starting the 24th. So that's when I expect to see more. That's when I would want to see more. But
you're obviously going to see more then. Again, I just thought, you know.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
We're 15 minutes in the 95-degree heat of dude's butts in my face. And then, all right, that's it. See ya.
So, because I'm sure the listeners have the same question I have. So you get to film or be there for the first 15 minutes.
Well, it's normally you film. Hey, we got a 15-minute window you could film and take pictures. And then after that, okay, camera's away, but right. You could still hang out and watch.
Right, so practice. I'm saying they told y'all to leave.
Right.
And then y'all have to come back an hour later.
Well,
when
in
they
the other building, yeah.
We walk out, yeah, walk from the practice
facility. So while they're practicing, y'all are just sitting around in the press box? Is that how it works?
In the work, in the media workroom, waiting on them. Waiting
okay,
on them to
waiting
finish.
On practice.
We're free food.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Lovie came and Christian Harris came and then no, and Jalen Petrie.
Okay, so to be interviewed.
Yes.
Okay, so now I get it. I never understood what coaches are trying to hide. I don't know if this was just a conditioning session or if they're actually running plays. If they're running plays and trying to implement the new playbook for the rookies, I kind of get it. I kind of get why they don't want people to record that, put it on social media, and then you have your Philadelphia Eagles, Washington Commanders, your future opponents. And people do that. They'll look, when you're in the NFL, the margin of victory and the talent is so thin, you look for every advantage that you can get. I understand why a coach would be a little ultra careful, sensitive to putting any information out there. But if they're just running routes 7-on-7, doing conditioning, that would be a good time for the media to get to know some of these
young
guys.
Let me put it this way. In years past where they had like four draft picks, okay, mm-hmm. I get it. Rookie camp is four dudes. You don't even have enough dudes to go through drills. But you had nine draft picks this year. Like you had nine new dudes and you had a bunch of undrafted, you know, free agents that you brought in. I mean, that was a good. What would you say, Sarge? There's a good 40, 50 people out there. I mean, it was a good contingent. It wasn't like it was just a couple of guys.
Yeah, and I think it was. And I guess my question would be to both of you all is, do you think that it's just by a team by team thing that they do? Because there were other people who were at training camps, rookie mini training camps, around the NFL where you got to see a lot. Like, right. I've seen a lot of video and things like that on social media.
So that answers the questions. Each team has their own policy regarding allowing the media and how much time they'll allow the media to record and visit. The question is, why? Like, why is there that fear? And if the fear is, hey, whether y'all like it or not, we don't want our plays, we don't want our practice to be out there for everyone to see, I get it. But if you're just... if you're trying to keep it close to the vest just for the sake of telling the media, hey, we control when and what you see, then that seems a little bit petty.
I don't know. Belichickian mindset.
Yeah, it could be that. Let me give you at least what I saw other than just bitching about we didn't get to see much other than stretching. Derek Stingley looks great. I mean, he ran
stretching?
Through. Stretching? Well, no. They did running. They did, all right, run as fast as you can from here to there and then run sideways and then run backwards and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, but let me challenge you on that. You said he looks great.
The foot looks good. I'm not saying, I don't know if he can go cover a number one wide receiver right now.
I was
going to
say, even an undrafted rookie cornerback is going to look good doing
that. Look, if I'm 2 months removed or whatever from a Lisfranc surgery, guess what I'm doing? I'm walking around in a boot right now.
You and me
I'm
both.
Not running around on the field. Right. So that was encouraging. Again, I don't know if he's in NFL shape. He looks to be in NFL shape. He looks good. And then the other one was John Metchie. He was stretching out. He's on the roller with his hamstrings and, you know, stretching out that ACL and everything. And he went through some of the running drills as well. And he had a female trainer with him the whole time. And she's like talking to him. And
that's
literally working one-on-one with him. And then Lovey said Friday afternoon that they expect John Metchie is going to play a role this year. Don't know when. Don't know if he'll be ready for the start of the season or whatever. But that was interesting, too, to see John Metchie. I mean, he was pushing himself. And then at one point, the girl had to tell him, like, no, don't do this one. Like, kind of slow your roll. But he's like, ready. He's hungry.
I'm going to tell you what surprised the hell out of me. Thomas Booker, the draft, the defensive lineman out of Stanford.
Big fella.
He's huge. I don't know what I was expecting, but I didn't expect him to be that big. Like, that young man is big. Also, Damian Pierce, running back out of Florida. You know, you see him play on Saturdays. You're like, okay, man, that guy has a lot of energy. Then, you know, we interviewed him. He has a lot of energy on draft night. Even out there, just, you know, going through the stretching and the small little sprints that they were doing, this guy has a lot of energy. And he looks small next to the, I can't think of the name of the tight end that they drafted in this battle. Yes, he's huge as well.
But he looks like a Gary Kubiak would have loved that. Yeah. He'd be like, oh, man, we got to get this guy some red zone targets.
But I love Damian Pierce's energy. You could just tell right off the rip that he's going to have a lot of energy.
Do you think the lack of cameras, because you brought up a good point in bringing up John Metchie, one of their high picks who obviously tore ACL late in the college season. Do you think it was more so people aren't trying to record him? Because at this point, he probably still has a little gimp to his step. Limp.
He didn't. And he was right in front of us. He was the closest to where all the media was. Like,
so you saw him moving side to side and running?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, wondering if it was to protect him.
I mean, you want to protect him, put him on the far edge of the field where nobody can see him. He was literally right in front of the cameras the whole time.
Put him on that backfield where they always used to put JJ.
The other thing I'll say, too, it was good to see Kenyon Green out there. He ended up signing his deal yesterday. There are some other guys at other camps. If I haven't signed my deal yet, I'm not coming to rookie camp. Kenyon Green was there going through all the drills and all that, and then they get his deal done yesterday. So that was good to see because, again, there were some other camps where if I ain't signed my deal, I ain't coming to rookie camp.
40 guys, that's a lot. I know they recently signed 12 undrafted rookies.
Yeah.
Then were some of the young second-year players there? The ones that
I gotta look at the roster. Yeah, there were some. They weren't all rookies that were there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, 713-212-5790. Going to take a quick timeout. Let's talk about those red-hot Astros. The streak ended, but the hot.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This continues. Robert, we see you there in the trenches only on Sports Talk 790.
Say who that? They want to do that. Run up if you will and get your ass whipped blue black. My nigga, my nerve fresh off the curb. Jelly, jam, and preserve. Nothing but all my
work. Welcome in. Welcome back in the trenches only on Sports Talk 790. If you want to jump in, 713-212-5790. We've mentioned it a couple of times, but the Houston Astros streak ended, but still very, very hot. The last game they played, they beat the Nationals 8-0, and Verlander once again looks solid. Let's go out to the phone lines. Robert wants to talk a little Houston Astros. What's going on, Robert? Robert, you there? All right. All right, what's going on, Robert?
Yeah, I was going, I just wanted to say something about the Astros. I know it's still really early in the season, but looking like, for rotation wise, do you believe if McCullers is still, in the circle of trust, as far as, you know, what we're going to get from him going into a potential 7-game series with Yankees, Blue Jays, Dodgers, Giants, you know, like, do you think they need to go out and get, like, one more ace? Or do you think we got a solid rotation to get us, you know, back to the promised land, or to the promised land? I know we were close last year. And, yeah, I'll hang up and listen.
All right, appreciate the call. I'll say this, though it is early, you know, most of us baseball experts, we like to wait till Memorial Day before we start watching the standings. But all jokes aside, with Lance McCullers, this is not even a baseball take, in my opinion. You just don't know. Like, you just don't know what you're going to get, if you're going to get anything back from him, until you get a chance to see him get on that mound, whether it's, you know, the lesser leagues out in Sugar Land or Corpus, wherever they may designate him. But I like the thought. Like, I like the idea with the way the Houston Astros are playing, number one in the AL West. And you look at some of these teams that they'll play against in the playoffs, because they are going to go to the playoffs. Do you start making that move as if Lance McCullers isn't going to get you anything? Or even without Lance McCullers, are you okay with your pitching staff?
You're definitely okay without Lance right now. And again, I think Michael Connor said it the other day, and if you haven't put yourself in this mindset, you should start putting yourself in this mindset. Just don't expect anything from Lance McCullers this year. If he ends up coming back and he plays a role and he does something for you, awesome. That's a win. But I would mentally prepare myself. And look, he's saying all the right things. He, when he talks to the media, oh yeah, I'm getting close, and you know, I'm gonna be throwing off a mound soon, I'm gonna be doing all this and that. I would just not put that expectation on this team. And again, the pitching staff has been great. I know Javier had his first bad outing on Saturday. It's going to happen. Everybody's going to have a bad outing every now and then. But overall, this pitching staff has been dominant. And again, and injuries are going to happen too. That's why you have Hunter Brown down in AAA, who's doing really well. He is knocking on the door. You have Brandon Belak as an option as well. But the pitching staff is fine now. I just would not have expectations of, oh, we get McCullers back. No, we just don't know. This thing could take a long time, and he may not even come back this year.
And with that being said, with the way that the Astros are playing right now, I don't even think you have to rush him back, especially with, you know, Justin Verlander pitched yesterday on 4 days rest. And so they're getting him back into his normal routine, which means that Christian Javier will probably go back into the bullpen. And so now you add him, you have Neris there, you have Montero there, you got Presley there, you got Stanek there, you know, Phil Maton, Abreu. Like, you're putting it back into a fully loaded bullpen that you can call upon if some of the starters have a bad outing and you need to bring, you know, a pitcher out of there. But Indy, well, I need to ask you something as a former professional athlete. How much is it going to be of them saving Lance McCullers from himself? Because he's going to see that these other pitchers are competing, and his competitive spirit is going to kick in. He's going to want to jump in and help out, or maybe it even be a mindset of him thinking that he may be losing his spot.
It depends on, do we even know the specifics of his injury? Because it seems like the specifics of his injury, like what exactly is wrong with him? Seems like they've been very vague about how he's feeling, exactly what's ailing him. And that matters as far as whether or not they have to protect him from himself. It's pretty black and white when you're a pitcher. If you're going out there and you're not 100% and it's affecting your pitches, no matter how much you want to compete, it's tough to really just go out there and try to fight through it. In football, depending on the position, like I remember I suffered a high ankle sprain. I tried to fight through it. You change up some things and you could be effective still. But with a pitcher, if your injury is ailing you and, you know, you don't have as much juice on your pitches, or you just can't control the ball like you're supposed to, We'll be able to tell in the first inning.
It's a tendon. It's a flexor tendon in that arm.
Yeah, so in his pitching arm. Yeah, so you don't even have to protect him from himself, because that injury is going to let him know whether or not he should even go out there and risk his quote-unquote legacy.
Especially as a pitcher, right?
Like a batter can try to fight through it, muscle through it, but a pitcher, that's
tough. Well, if there's anything we learned about this Houston Astros organization and how James Click and the training staff and all these guys operate, no one's ever rushed back.
Right.
In fact, we're more often than not, we're sitting here going, well, get him out there. What did we hear about Saturday night? Dusty says, yeah, I think Jeremy Pena is going to be back tomorrow. But then the lineup card comes out yesterday. Altuve's back, but Pena's not. Then they ask Dusty. Dusty says, yeah, look, he woke up this morning. It was just still a little sore. Think could have started. And they even said Saturday night he was available off the bench. Again, they're playing it safe. And more often than not, this team is going to play it safe with injuries.
Okay, so if you're moving on as if Lance McCullers is not going to play this year, and I believe that's the safe way to go, and whatever he gives you is icing on the cake. So with that being said, and the thoughts are the Houston Astros, one of the best team in majors, they're contenders, they're not just trying to get into the playoffs, are you actively looking for another ace?
No, no, I'm fine with the arms you got. The arms right now so far have shown they are good enough for you to get to the promised land. And again, I think it's only a matter of time before Hunter Brown from AAA comes up here. He's striking out fools left and right. He is going to get an opportunity at some point with this team down the stretch of the season. The question is, you know, the offense. Again, the batting average, it came up a little bit this weekend. That's good. It's good to see. You want to see that continue to come up. Yuli just had, if Yuli could play the rest of his games at D.C., I think Steve Sparks said they're going to have to drag him onto the plane to get him out of D.C. because he was so red hot in D.C. this weekend.
Days and nights together.
Yeah, he finally figured out how to handle the baby thing.
Yes.
But if anything, it's just the consistent bat. Like, I need consistent bats from Bregman, Tucker, the guys you count on most. Altuve's doing his thing. Brantley's just being the Brantley. He's your professional hitter. Jordan, I could take the good with the bad. He's going to have 0-for-5 games of 3 strikeouts, but then the next night he's going to hit 2 home runs. I could take the good and bad with him. I just need my Tuckers and my Bregmans, my leaders of this team, to step up and give me a little bit more, and they're going to be fine. But again, that we saw it over the weekend. They send Nico Goodrum down to AAA. It just wasn't working. I mean, he was batting like 113. We need better, even if you're going to be our utility guy, we need you to be a pretty decent utility guy. Ledmus Diaz is a decent utility guy. So they go and make this trade for Mauricio Dubon from the San Francisco Giants and say, here's another guy who could play shortstop, he could play outfield, he could play third base, second base, he could play anything. They're going to give him a shot to see what he could do here now. But I just want a little bit more consistency from the offense. It was a little frustrating yesterday. Verlander's giving you all he's got. He had a rough first inning, about 30 pitches he threw. And then we get, into the fifth inning and, it's still nothing. It's like, guys, come on, let's get Verlander a run or two here. He's busting his ass. And finally, Maldi hits the home run in the fifth and you're off and running. But that's just my concern. The pitching has been absolutely stellar. I don't have much concerns about that. I just want a little bit more consistency out of the offense.
Well, I look at it like this, Chris, and we've had this discussion before on air and off air. I just don't know of a consistent baseball lineup. I don't know any major league team that has a consistent lineup as far as hitting is concerned.
Well, the Astros have had it the last 4 years. I'd say since 2017 up until last year, the Astros had a really consistent lineup.
Yeah, but it got to the point where they got consistent. They weren't consistent in the early months. They weren't consistent, 34, 35 games into the season. They got that way as far as up and down the batting order. But I will say this. I want to jump back to something real quick. We talked about the pitching. One thing that I like about the Astros organization is they always end up somehow with very, very good problems. And what I mean by very, very good problems is right now, they when Lance McCullers come back, they have an abundance of starting pitching. That's a good problem to have. Center field. When Jake Myers gets healthy and he comes back, now you got Jake Myers, you have Jose Siri, you have McCormick, and then at some point, somebody's going to have to say, we got to see what, is his name Pedro Leon, if I'm not mistaken, Chris?
Yeah. Crushing homers in AAA.
We're going to have to bring him up to see,
He'll be up here at some point.
And that's what I'm saying. You got to give him a spot or a chance to see what he has, just like you did Jose Siri on last year. So now you got a good problem there, but now you got to look at it and say, well, McCormick, he can get hot. Siri, we definitely need his speed in the outfield and on the bases. Jake is a consistent hitter, and now Pedro is a very, very good hitter. So I just like these overabundance of good problems that the Astros run into.
All right, quick timeout. If you're wondering in regards to the NFL schedule why we didn't see one matchup involving the Texans in a primetime slot, we'll let you know straight from the horse's mouth why we didn't see that, and we'll talk about it in the trenches only on Sports Talk 790. For the love of money. Gotta get on the grind, giving it up. Welcome in, welcome back on this Monday. Hope you're enjoying your day. If you want to jump in the trenches with us, 713-212-5790. Last week, a lot was said about the NFL schedule being released, even though we already knew who teams were playing, but now we were able to put dates, times, and network television channels as far as who was going to play where. And one game, one matchup, would have had many, many eyes across the nation on the tube, but they decided not to make this a primetime game.
Yeah, this headline caught my eye this morning. It said, schedule maker tells Adam Schein, NFL did not want Browns Texans in week one. The article says, game on December 4th will be the first trip back to Houston for Deshaun Watson. Watson was traded from Texans to Cleveland earlier this year. What's still up in the air is whether Watson will face any discipline from the league after a grand jury declined to charge Watson with sexual assault, blah, blah, blah. This matchup could be very interesting, but when it came down to making the schedule, NFL Vice President of Broadcast Planning Mike North said that Watson's availability for the Browns did not factor into things. So, in other words, you didn't want to make that game week one, make it this big primetime game, and then Deshaun ends up getting suspended and doesn't even play. And then suddenly you got Jacoby Brissett versus Davis Mills in Houston, and nobody gives a damn about the matchup at that point. But here was a little bit of that conversation with NFL VP of Broadcast Planning, Mike North.
In any way, shape, or form, did you factor in availability or ask questions about availability for Deshaun Watson when doing the Cleveland schedule?
The honest answer to your question is no. None of us know. None of us know if he's going to be here all year, if he's not going to be here at all. None of us know what is going to happen. And it might not even happen this year, Adam. I mean, sure, I don't know enough about the legal system, but, you know, we could be a year or two away from all these things finally settling. The answer to your question is no. And as you look at the Cleveland schedule, you see they've got a national television game in week three, a national television game in week eight, an opportunity to be back on national television and the NFL Network and the Saturday pool in week 15. So there's a game in the first third, a game in the middle, and a game in the last third. No idea what's going to happen. I don't know anything more than you do at this point. So the honest answer to your question is we really didn't think about it. With one caveat, I will tell you, we knew that Houston and Cleveland were obviously going to play each other this year. And, you know, Cleveland at Houston is going to mean something. I'll be honest with you, we did see a schedule somewhere along the hundreds of thousands that we looked at this year where that game was in week number one. And I'm just not sure that would have been the right place for it, right? That's maybe not the right, you know, game that we want all eyes on, attention on, you know, taking attention away from some of these other Big Ten polls like we talked about in week one. So other than maybe really just thinking about where that actual Cleveland at Houston game fell, there really wasn't a whole lot of attention paid because, honestly, none of us know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's a brilliant point. That's an honest answer, which is what I thought looking at the schedule. I would have considered it. I think you answered it perfectly in terms of the I don't know, because I don't know, you don't know, nobody knows. So that's an honest answer, too. And also, I like that on Houston and Cleveland. That's an excellent point.
So they put it week 13, knowing if Deshaun gets suspended for half the season, he'll be back by that game. But the only thing I didn't like is it's a noon game on week 13. It's a noon game on a Sunday on CBS. Like, make that at least an afternoon game, if not a primetime game. Make it a Sunday night game.
And that's why he is able to say what he said. Like, I don't know how to call somebody a lie properly without, you know, being politically correct. But Mike North is lying. And the thing that
lying about him, what?
About what he said, that honestly they didn't think about take the Deshaun Watson suspension into consideration. And that's why, you know, when they were making this game, they didn't look at it as him potentially being suspended as a factor. Like, no, you no. And like I, and Chris, what you just read, that gives him an out. Hey, look, we put it at 12 o'clock on this day. It really means nothing. It's just the Cleveland Browns versus the Houston Texans. No, it is not. It is way more than that. And you know that even at that 12 o'clock game, there's going to be a bunch of eyes watching that game. They're going to get probably that 12 o'clock game is probably going to be the most watched game that they have probably all season.
See, here's the thing. I actually felt like, and I don't know Mike North, or, you know, if he's known for lying or straddling the fence so he doesn't have to answer a question. I thought that was refreshing because it felt transparent. It felt like he said, like, we don't know, and we didn't want to schedule it week one because we don't want people watching the game because they want to see whether or not, you know, Deshaun Watson, who's been accused of, you know, 22 allegations of sexual harassment, whatever the correct legal term, taken on his former team, and he left with bad terms. Like he spelled it out, like, even though that's intriguing, and I'm surprised the NFL's all about that dollar, about putting eyes on games. I'm surprised the NFL wasn't like, hey, even though we don't like what happened, wink, wink, let's make this week one, but we just don't know if he's going to be suspended or not. So, no, I felt like what he said was very transparent, and he even went into the whole, do we really want that to be the first game? And the fact that it's week 13, the thought is, okay, well, even if he has to serve a 10-game suspension, he'll be back. Okay, like, good for y'all. That makes sense.
And that's what I was going to say, Indy. The NFL always gives off the perception that we care. Mm-hmm. We care. We're, you know, this is what we're trying to be as transparent as possible. Of course, Black Lives Matter to us. Of course, we respect the fact that Colin Kaepernick took a knee. You know, of course, we care about, you know, women and what goes on, you know, what happens to them as far as, you know, domestic violence and sexual harassment, sexual assault. Of course, we care about all these things, but we really don't. Like that Mike North answer is a typical NFL office answer. Yes. Oh no, we didn't take none of that into consideration. And I guarantee you, well, I don't want to say guarantee, but I believe behind the scenes they were saying, hey, we need to make sure that if Rodgers suspends him for this amount of time, because he hasn't told us how long he's going to suspend him, if he's going to suspend him at all, if he's even going to suspend him this year. But let's just make sure that we have a safe spot just in case he does get suspended 4 games, 6 games, 10 games. We'll make it further out to whereas he'll even have enough time to come back and get himself acclimated to playing in the NFL. And then we'll throw him on TV. And then we'll put him up, you know, since he has to play his former team anyway. Now, that's a typical NFL answer to me.
Yeah, again, the fact that if that game was somehow prime time, if it was a Sunday night game or Thursday night in week 13, then I'm leaning towards, yes, I agree with what you're saying. But one, if they're waiting till week 13 because they think he'll be back, to me, that's a no-brainer. Like, it's, you're supposed to do that. Huh?
It's pandering, too.
What is pandering?
That
waiting till week 13?
Waiting till week 13 and scheduling it at 12 o'clock. That's pandering. And what I mean by it's pandering is because Deshaun Watson has to come back to the place and play in the stadium where the victims, you know, or I'm sorry, the accusers, the 22 accusers that accused him of sexual harassment, sexual assault, whatever the case may be, he's coming back to play in that city. You know, in that stadium, there could be potentially some, you know, relatives, family members. There's definitely going to be protesters. There's going to be protesters before the game, and there's going to be protesters in the stands against Deshaun Watson. So,
but how's the pandering? They're already going to play Cleveland.
That's what I'm saying. That's why they did not make it a prime time game. That's why they just said, okay.
So who are they pandering to?
They're pandering to the accusers. The NFL doesn't want to make it seem, doesn't want Deshaun coming back to Houston to be bigger than it should be. Because now it's almost saying that we're propping up or giving props to this guy who is still, you know, being sued in court civilly because of these allegations.
I always try to ask myself, what would I do if I was a decision maker, knowing that no matter what you do, there's always going to be a side to say that they don't agree with it. If I'm Roger Goodell, or if I'm Mike North, if I'm actually the man or woman, well, I'm a man, so look. If I'm the man who's making the decision, I'm trying to keep it under wraps. This is a bad look for the NFL. Like, whether you believe he did it, whether you believe he's innocent, whether you believe this is a setup, I'm not getting into that conversation. But it's the Deshaun Watson story right now is a bad look for the NFL, period. Like, it's a bad look. So I personally would try to bury that game under all kind of scheduling and them doing it at 12 o'clock. Yeah, but that, it just doesn't feel like, oh, we're pandering because we want the people who are against sexual assault, who's 99.9% of the people in the world anyway, we want them to feel like we're doing something for them.
Yeah.
Like, no. To me, it's more, it's such a bad look. You don't want to spotlight that game.
So that's what I'm saying. That's why it's not a Thursday night game. That's why it's not a Sunday night game. That's why it's not a Monday night game. That's why it's not a primetime 7:30, 8 o'clock, whatever time primetime starts in the NFL. That's why it's not one of those games, because now it's the only game that's on. And now you consistently have to talk about what Deshaun Watson is going through.
But you're going to get that no matter what.
Right.
By you letting him back in the league, embrace it. You've let him back in, and you haven't suspended him at all. You know what the schedules just say? Oh, man, what an awesome matchup that's going to be. The storyline of Deshaun going back to Houston, what a fun matchup. And then just stop.
Regionally, though, what I'm saying is you blend that game in regionally to make it look like it's not a big deal, but you also promote it to being a big deal. It'll be a big deal leading up to the game.
It's a big deal, like, period. Like, that, there's no way to hide that, but it's not a good look. With so many different storylines in the end, Tom Brady coming back, and when Tom Brady goes to play New England, Jameis Winston coming back from injury. Like, there's so many different storylines that are somewhat positive or not a stain on the NFL shield. Like, everyone knows what's going on with Deshaun in Cleveland. It's a bad look. I would even say, as many people that would tune in because of the storyline, the NFL would rather not even have that game take place. I don't think they want it to take place.
I agree.
So it's like, you know what? Let's put it at Sunday 12 noon. Quick timeout. We'll get back to the calls in the trenches only on Sports Talk 790.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're in the trenches.
Stand up, get your hands up.
With ND Kalu.
ND Kalu.
Welcome in, welcome back. 1 hour already down, 1 hour to go this Monday. Talking a little Houston Astros NBA playoffs as the conference championship games, or series, I should say, are set. And obviously talking a little Houston Texans and the matchup between the Houston Texans and the Cleveland Browns. We heard from Mike North, the guy who controls the scheduling, talk about why he did not schedule the Houston Texans, Cleveland Browns primetime, and whether or not, if they knew, whether or not Deshaun Watson would be available. Let's head out to Sugar Land and bring in our good buddy of the show, Tony. What's going on, Tony?
What's going on, fellas? Hope you guys had a wonderful... Deshaun, the topic with Deshaun Watson. Gordon, did you know who the leading team in batting average is right now? In all of baseball.
It is the Los Angeles, or no, the I think it was still the Rockies, right?
It's Colorado Rockies. Yeah. 17-16. So my question, and even with that, I've got a question for you. Do Browns equate wins?
No, not necessarily.
No. Okay. I'm just wondering because, I mean, a team that's leading their runs is crazy. Baseball is such a sport that it's a team sport that, man, it's crazy. Batting averages, Colorado, 17-16, leading the league in, and I think Astros, they moved up a little bit. I think they're at 226 last I checked. But I just wanted to put that out there because I really think that at the end of the day, batting averages don't play a huge role in a team actually being successful.
Yeah, and just,
I'm not saying it's important.
And just understand what I was saying. I mean, I was being nitpicky with the argument on Friday, but I was just saying this is a team that in the Astros that take out the COVID year, 3 of the last 4 years they've been the leader in batting average in all of baseball. And so for them, you know, the first month and a half, you know, into the season, for them to be where they were, bottom four, bottom six coming into this weekend in batting average, it was just like, come on, guys, we need to pick it up. Again, it wasn't hurting them necessarily because they've had stellar pitching and they've been able to win games without it. But over the course of a season, all I was saying was, is this team's going to have the success we want them to get to a World Series? you're going to have to see those averages come up. And we're starting to see a little bit. Yuli had a nice weekend. But again, I'm saying like the Tuckers and the Bregmans, the guys that have to be the leader of this team, they got to do better than what they're doing so far.
Yeah, I get that. I just think that is weird. Like, it's really weird. If you get to the Texas take, man, look, it's so crazy that, you know, I think we're putting 100 on 10 when it comes to this whole scheduling thing. It could just be the Texans are a bad team, man. The Texans just are a bad team. You know, I mean, they just are a bad team. Even adding the Deshaun Watson scenario to it, who wants to see, outside of Houston, who wants to see Deshaun Watson playing against the Houston Texans? I'm just saying in general. It's not really a good matchup. They like light years better than they are. So it's just not a good matchup. And the Texans are a bad team.
Well, hold on. Here's my take on that. That's probably the only storyline outside of Cleveland and Houston, Tony, in my opinion. The whole Deshaun storyline is the only thing that does make it interesting for people outside of those two markets.
Yeah, but that's all it is, though. You're talking about something outside, off the field. So it really doesn't – I mean, when you're talking about football, and I get it, Andy, but it's a football game. Even if it's just that, you're looking at the competitive of the game, what that's going to look like. It just doesn't draw attention to me. And I'm a Houston Texans fan. And I would love to see Deshaun Watson come back. But if you gave me the chance, I know you guys talked about this once before, but if you gave me the opportunity to go see the Texans play Deshaun Watson or the Texans play the Dallas Cowboys, at the end of the day, a lot of people are going to pick Cowboys because it has more nostalgia to just, you know, one game where Deshaun Watson has come back and played the Cleveland Browns and not in the same district or that type of thing. So, it's off the court. I mean, it's an off the field thing to me. It really doesn't. I don't see it, so.
All right, well, appreciate that. I will say this, that's more of a, look, you're talking to a guy, I'll find joy and find a reason to watch the Detroit Lions taking on the New York Giants, but I get it. When you're looking for an angle, when these network executives who make millions upon millions of dollars in advertising dollars are looking for angles for every game, yes, here in Houston, I would say most people want to see Houston versus Dallas because there's this weird rivalry that goes on between Houston and Dallas where many Houston fans just want to see Dallas fail and they want to beat Dallas. They're going to be cheering against the Dallas Mavericks just because they're Dallas. You know, that's a Houston thing. I get that. But if you're in New York, if you're in the Midwest, if you're on the West Coast and you're watching or you've heard about the Deshaun Watson Houston story, I think some people are going to be a little intrigued, like, you know what? This dude forced his way out. He basically disrespected management, disrespected ownership, and was able to force his way out less than a year after signing a monster deal. And now he has a chance to face the team that he forced his way out. I think that would put some eyes on it just to see how is that going to play out. People in New York don't care about the Houston Texan Dallas rivalry. They're like, what? Why does Houston care about what's going on in Dallas? Aren't they all part of the Lone Star State? But people outside of those two markets. And again, I know, oh, I don't care. I'm from Houston. I don't care about that. Well, guess what? You're not thinking like executives, you know, advertising executives who make millions of dollars think. They're trying to figure out how do you get most of the eyes possible on every single one of these matchups. And I think outside of those two markets, more people would be intrigued to see what Deshaun Watson is going to do against his old team versus this Houston-Dallas rivalry that doesn't exist outside of those two cities.
Well, let me run down really quick the 11 games before the Texans played the Browns, all right? And, and I'm going to ask you a question after this. The Colts, Broncos, Bears, Chargers, Jaguars, Raiders, Titans, Eagles, Giants, Commanders, Dolphins. Out of the first 11 games, and if you need me to repeat it, I can. What do you think that the Texans record would be by then in their first 11 games?
So tough. First 11 games, let's go 4-7.
You think 4-7?
Mm-hmm.
I could be potentially 5-6, right? And if they are 5-6 at that time, if they are 5-6,
give me the 5 wins.
They're still in contention.
Give me those five wins.
I'm gonna give you those 5 wins in just a second. But they can still be in contention. That's still, you know, part of that. They'll be in there for a playoff playoff berth. So that game may be important once they play the Browns. So, Chris, you want me to give you the five wins, right?
Bears, Giants, Commanders. I'll give you those three. Okay. And Jacksonville. That's four. Who's their fifth one?
The Dolphins.
Hang on.
Anything else you got?
Bears, Jags.
Anything else you got for me?
Giants, Commanders. So you think they're going to go on a three-game win streak in November?
They could. Okay. Yeah, I think that they could. I think
when's the last time the Texans won three games in a row?
Hey, listen, Chris. Well, at this time last year when we were looking at the Bengals schedule,
it's and talking about, say, it's about the Bengals. Possible. I'm just saying we got to talk ourselves into five wins at that point in the season.
And so if they're 5-6 going into the Browns game, they're going to be playing for something. That's so going to be 5-7,
and then they go to Dallas. They're 5-8.
I'm just
then
talking
it's
about
Kansas City. They're 5-9. Then it's at Tennessee. 5-10.
I'm just talking.
And that season went downhill very quickly.
If the Texans are 5-6 at that point, I'm asking the NFL to flex that game. Hey man, can you move that to the primetime game? Us against Deshaun Watson. And what if they hold on? What if they pull it off though? What if the Texans pull off the victory over the Browns, a game that they're not supposed to win? Oh, hey, listen.
Oh, there will be people dancing on Deshaun's grave. Yeah,
that's all they care about. Well, that in the game next week that they're going to lose to the Cowboys, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, 4-7. I mean, or 5-6. That's not good. Like, I'm not. You're acting like he's saying they're going to go 9-2. Like,
no.
Even
but
if
I'm
they
just,
go 5-6,
I'm just saying, like,
and beat the teams y'all mentioned. I mean, it's still the NFL. So, yeah, that's not.
If they're 5-6 and they beat Cleveland and they get to 6-6, that is. I mean, we're throwing a parade here.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm not, because that's not anything to throw a parade for.
I'm like, saying expectations are not that this team will be 500.
What's your over under wins?
You questioned the five victories, but then you named the teams that they could beat. It's doable. But that's the great thing about the NFL. You just never know. Like, I remember this time last year when I said I expect the Texans to beat Jacksonville, your head almost exploded. Like, do you remember that? To open the season, your head almost exploded. You thought that was one of the craziest takes in the world when I said I expect the Texans to beat Jacksonville opening day.
Yeah.
Because they had a young rookie quarterback.
I thought Urban was going to be better.
Yeah, you know what? I did too. Like, I did as well. So, but that's just the NFL. You just never know what's going to happen.
So right now, the Texans are the biggest underdog in week one. Not just home underdog, biggest underdog, period.
Who are they playing?
They're hosting the Indianapolis Colts. They are 8-point underdogs.
Yeah, I expect them to lose that game.
Would you take the Texans plus the 8, though?
I mean, I'm not a big gambler. Like, either you win or lose. Like, I don't care about the plus 8, the minus 8. If you lost, you lost.
That's how we make money, ND. What are you talking about?
I'm saying if you lost, like, we're talking about the team and the NFL and the parity of the NFL. Like,
so
you
expect the Texans to lose, but you expect them to lose big then if they're losing by 8?
It doesn't matter. A loss is a loss.
Well, that's not how money's made. We got to bet on the spread.
And that line's going to change by the time the week one comes anyway.
Yeah, maybe for the worse.
I actually have a feeling Matt Ryan is going to be a good fit in Indianapolis.
He probably will be.
Like, I have a feeling it's going to be a good fit.
Is he
fit.
That much of an upgrade from what Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz were?
As far as Carson Wentz, not so much talent-wise at this point of his career, but locker room-wise, yes. And there's a big difference. Quick timeout if you want to jump in, 713-212-5790 in the trenches, only on Sports Talk 790. Check the rock. Speaking of networks and programming, now that we have the NBA Conference Championship set, what do y'all think the networks want to see as far as the NBA Finals? Out in the West, we have the Dallas Mavs taking on Golden State. And out in the East, we have the Boston Celtics taking on the Miami Heat. It seems pretty obvious the networks want Golden State, Boston.
Yes.
Correct?
That is the sexiest matchup. It gives you the biggest TV markets. Whole East Coast cares about Boston. Whole West Coast cares about Golden State. And then people in the Midwest and Iowa, oh, Steph Curry's playing. Yeah, Jason Tatum's becoming a bigger, bigger name. Yeah, that's the matchup they want. The worst is Dallas Heat, which ironically would be a rematch of the finals from a decade ago when Dirk won.
I know I'm about 2 years late, but when I was watching the game on Friday evening with Boston and Milwaukee, obviously, and Giannis had a great game. But anytime Giannis would do something, Jason Tatum would just one-up him.
that dude's a beast. Again, I know I'm 2 years late with this statement, but I've always known Jason Tatum to be good, but he's a beast. He's a shutdown. I can take over. He's probably a little spotty, a little inconsistent with how great and effective he is, but yeah, that's a star right there.
The one thing about Jason Tatum that bothers me, Indy, you know, growing up, you had that one kid that really couldn't perform until he started crying. You know, the one that was like, you're like, man, you better than this. Then you had to like talk bad to him or hit him or punch him and get him crying. Then all of a sudden, the talent just comes out of nowhere. He gets to playing like no other. That's how it is with Jason Tatum, because in the first three games of that series, like Jason Tatum was almost nowhere to be found. And a lot of the commentators were saying, well, he won his matchup against Kevin Durant when they went up against the Brooklyn Nets in the first round. He outplayed Kevin Durant to some extent. He got them past the Brooklyn Nets, and now he's in this matchup with Milwaukee, and he just was like nowhere to be found.
In game three, he had 10 points, but in games one and two, he had 29 and 21. So game three, he was not there, but games one and two, he was still pretty solid. And then from game five on, he had 30 or more points. Well, except for game seven, where he had 23.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, he started to get a lot of slander on social media by the NBA analysts, by these sports talk shows. And the next thing you know, Indy, he just turned it on. When they lost that game, I think it was game five when Marcus Smart had those two mishaps at the end of the game. They said, hey, look, for Jason Tatum, this is a win or go home game for him in game six, and we need to see more. And he came out. That's the game that you watched, Indy, and he just took over.
We had a guy, it's funny you bring up the story, when somebody starts crying, that's when they're going to play their best. We had a guy in junior high. I went to Pat Neff Middle School in San Antonio, Pat Neff Texans. That was actually our name. We had this guy, when the coach would yell at him and he would start crying, and it wasn't like, you know, punk crying, but it was like he was trying to suck up his tears. We would just smile and be like, John's about to go wreck shop. Like when he started crying, it happened twice on the football field. And he got into a fight. Some eighth grader was picking on him, like slapped him, and he started crying. We all knew, like, if you knew John, like, when those tears come, it's like, you better back up. Yeah. And when that eighth grader slapped him and he started crying, I remember I just smiled, like, he about to wreck shop. So you got those guys. But like I was saying with Tatum, like, he's just so up and down. But when he's up, oh, it's magical watching what he does. 713-212-5790. Let's head out to Katy, Texas, and talk to Jay. What's going on, Jay?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I just want to dive from the NFL talking about the scheduling. I do think that they really did consider it, because he even said so, because he's talking about, well, a little caveat is about the first game, because he's like, that first game, we don't want that game to take away the attention from other games that have been played. Let's think about that. In the first game of the season, everyone's 0-0, and, you know, there's a lot of optimism and hope around that. So who put this first game on the had this game on the first game when, you know, you got this guy that has all his legal stuff hanging over his head, and you don't want that to be the main, you know, the main thing that everybody's looking at their attention to, drawing a lot of attention from these other games. And that's why they kind of probably did put it back at game 12, because who knows, by that time, you know, season goes out the way they predicted, Texas may be 2-10, 3-9, the Browns may have a winning record and may be in playoff contention. And that game ain't really going to be, the only people who's going to really be concerned about it, hey, maybe during that time, you know, during the year, the Texans may, who knows how many sellout games they may have or how they may look on ratings. But I bet you pretty much that game probably will sell out, and you probably will see the ratings locally go up, you know, and, you know, in Cleveland, you know, they're probably going to be following them anyway because of their record. So I think that does to play that by that time, it probably won't even be draw the same amount of attention nationally from the media as it would have opened up the first game. And I'll hang up and listen to your guys' opinion on that.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we said before the call, Jay. And we'll just see how it plays out. I believe there's going to be a little bit more interest than other folks believe in that Cleveland-Houston game, regardless of record, because of the soap opera storyline behind it, if he's even playing. I saw a tweet, and I want to get y'all's take on this. Pro Football Focus tweeted out over the weekend, and I saved it, but I can't find it now. So I'm not going to read it verbatim. But Pro Football Focus basically said The NFL owes it to the...
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Fans owes it to the Cleveland fans to let people know what they're going to do with Deshaun Watson so they can figure out which tickets they're going to buy, if they're going to buy tickets, which games they're going to kind of travel to, knowing whether or not Deshaun Watson is going to be on the field. Do you feel like Pro Football Focus is correct in saying this isn't just about Deshaun Watson, Cleveland Browns, Houston Texans? It's about the fans, the Cleveland fans who are trying to make plans for this upcoming season. Roger Goodell should let them know what they're in store for as far as their starting quarterback.
I mean, haven't they I feel like they've already kind of sent the message that they're not going to suspend him.
Oh, right? So you're like, expecting him to play the whole season?
I don't know. I mean, like, I thought they would have said something when, okay, the Supreme, or the, what do you call it, the jury decided not to pursue criminal charges. Yeah, like, I just thought that was the time to say, all right, so we got a resolution on that. Let's just say you caused a big mess and all this. We're gonna give you 4 games just because you made a distraction and you blew up the Houston Texans and all this stuff. Like, let's just give you 4 games for that and let's move on. The fact that they still haven't ruled anything, like, keeps telling me, like, maybe this is they're just not going to suspend him at all.
Yeah, I feel that way too, Chris. And, you know, back in the day, a non-criminal conviction indictment would have automatically, you know, sealed the fate and said he's going to be back. There would have been nothing that the league could have done because he wasn't criminally charged with anything. But now that the power that Roger Goodell and the owners have to be able to still suspend you, even if you weren't charged with a crime, That leaves a lot of things in limbo. And we've seen, you know, when the power's up to Roger Goodell, you never know what could happen. And so I agree. I think that the NFL should go ahead and say, all right, Deshaun Watson is either going to be suspended or he's not going to be suspended, because I feel like you do owe it to the fans. You can't just keep them in limbo and say, buy this ticket. He may play or he may not. You know, that's almost like that's robbery. You're sticking them up. You're holding up the fans. Well,
keep in mind, this is the same league that charges the same amount for a preseason ticket than they do for a regular season ticket.
Yeah, but I think that they do owe it to the fans. And if you are going to make, you know, if you are going to travel, because there are some diehard, you know, loyal Cleveland Browns fans who travel to away games as well. And of course, they're going to support their team, but you also want to support it knowing that Deshaun Watson is going to be in the lineup. Hey, well, side note, how many Cleveland Browns fans do you think is going to be at the NRG December 4th? There's going to be a lot.
Oh, there's going to be a lot.
A lot?
A lot.
From Cleveland coming down here?
Maybe.
Oh, I'm thinking of the ones that live here.
Well, that too. I think that it's going to be, because you think about it, those guys, those fans live for this type of stuff. They live for this type of, the dog pound, ain't that what they call it? They live for this type of stuff. So they probably take over NRG and just run rampshot.
Stop the presses. Shame on me, and I will take all the blame for this. I can't believe that we're 1 hour, 27 minutes into this show. I'm going to say shame on y'all, because that's the reason why I have y'all here, to help keep me in line.
Uh-huh.
And we have not mentioned arguably the most entertaining thing that took place this weekend, and it definitely was a highlight for Houston. I cannot believe that we've been on this show for 1 hour, 27 minutes, and 38 seconds, and we have not mentioned
it. I thought you didn't want me to talk about you.
The blood moon?
I thought you didn't want me to talk about you hosting the Texans Volunteer Day, 10th Annual Texans Volunteer Day.
That's not it. And what'd you say?
The blood moon.
What is that?
You didn't see the eclipse last night?
Wow.
Lunar eclipse? You didn't step outside?
We should lose our license to be a sports talk show.
Well, we talked to Astros.
Yeah.
We talked Texans minicamp.
One of the most exciting events to take place this weekend.
The rugby team played Saturday night.
Jermell Charlo from H-Town breeding Brian Castaño in their second matchup. First of all, shout out to the Charlo twins and Jermell Charlo. That was a hell of a fight. Shout out to my illegal, what do you call it? That y'all say is illegal, but I say
fire
it's
stick.
My fire stick that I got from the barbershop. It worked out perfectly, and I was able to watch that fight. That was a hell of a fight. Even if you're not into boxing,
That was a hell of a fight. So, yes, I just shut the show down, and I want to say a shout-out to Jermell Charlo, who's been in the trenches with us before, now, and congratulate him on that huge win.
Now Jermell just needs a shot at Canelo. That's all. That's what's next for him. I think that's what he wants, and if he could get that, I mean, that would really put his name on the map.
That would take him. Is he ready for that?
I think he is. I mean, he's currently the unified light middleweight. Now, Canelo did just fight at light heavyweight, which clearly was too much for him because he got schooled in that fight, if anybody watched that. And so he may try that again, but I think he's going to end up going down to middleweight. And Jermell may have to get a catch weight or something like that because he is a light middleweight right now. But I think he's ready for it.
And real quick, speaking of boxing, an NFL future Hall of Famer retired recently. He stepped into the boxing ring. First professional fight, he gets a knockout, Frank Gore. Frank Gore knocks out his first opponent. Quick timeout. We'll get back to the calls, back to the discussion in the trenches, only on Sports Talk 790. Welcome in, welcome back. Luka Doncic was telling all of the Suns to move, get out of the way as he headed to the basket and showing MVP type performance, leading the Dallas Mavs to the Western Conference Championship. I know we may lose about 100 listeners, but I'm willing to risk it to keep it real. I'm rooting for the Mavs. They're from Dallas. I'm all things Texas. They're the last team in Texas to be representing the NBA playoffs. I'm rooting for the Dallas Mavericks.
Somebody wrote an article about how the Dallas Mavericks are more relevant than the Cowboys.
That's ridiculous.
Because they've had way more postseason success in recent years than the Cowboys ever have. Since the last 25 years.
Because of the NFL being the NFL, that's ridiculous.
Okay. That's horrible.
But like, if you want a team who's actually won more.
No, they've had more Dallas success, Mavericks. But to say they're more relevant, no.
Chris, say that again.
I'll find the article.
Just give me the synopsis. What is it? Not the synopsis. The cliff notes. You say
synopsis
that somebody
is correct as well.
Oh, okay. That someone said that
the Dallas Mavericks have had more postseason success the last 20 years than the Cowboys.
Well,
have.
That's a fact.
Well, haven't they went out in the first round in like the last 3 years?
Still make it. Yeah, that's still a fact.
Well, the Cowboys have made the playoffs. The Cowboys made the playoffs last year, and they lost in the first round.
A championship.
Well, the Cowboys have won championships in the past, too.
Yes, over 25 years ago.
Well, you just said that the Mavericks was a decade ago. Now, speaking of that, hey,
this is more recent.
I got to get this off real quick, Indy. Just real quick, since we were talking about schedules, right? Because I'm kind of upset. And I'm upset with the NFL really quick because, you know, they came out and said that the Cowboys are tied with the Washington Commanders for the easiest schedule in 2022. And at first I said, last year I let them get away with that. I was like, all right, I get it. But this year, no possible way. On their schedule, they play Tampa Bay, Cincinnati, Los Angeles Rams, Philly, Green Bay, Tennessee, Minnesota, and and Indianapolis.
Yeah, they also get Houston. Giants,
a lot of
Bears, Lions, Commanders, twice.
A lot of other teams get those.
Jacksonville.
A lot of other teams get those easy teams as well. But this is what I understand: the top five hardest schedules are the Rams, Cardinals, Bengals, Buccaneers, 49ers, and Chiefs. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I named at least three out of those because the 49ers and the Chiefs are tied for the fifth hardest schedule in 2022. But out of the six teams, I named three that the Cowboys had to play who they say have the hardest schedule. And if I'm looking at these, I could go down the list. You think about it. Tampa Bay won a Super Bowl. Cincinnati was in a Super Bowl. Los Angeles Rams just won a Super Bowl. How? And if I keep going, the Philadelphia Eagles are supposed to be very good this year.
Are they?
Green Bay.
Who said that?
Tennessee. Indianapolis, even Minnesota Vikings.
I've said this from day one.
You said Kirk Cousins sucks.
He does.
I've said this from day one. It gives us something to talk about. The whole easy schedule is one of the dumbest phrases, one of the dumbest rankings that they have. They go off some formula, the wins and losses of the teams the wins and losses from the previous year of the teams that they're going to play during the current year. There are no easy games. The Detroit Lions right now, probably one of the worst teams in the NFL. I'm telling you, there's never going to be a time where somebody plays against the Detroit Lions, and at least in the trenches, they're like, oh, that was easy. Like, you might win by two touchdowns or three touchdowns, but you're never walking off the field like, huh, that was just easy. Like, it's, I see why you're upset, but it's, you should be upset at the fact that we even talk about easy schedule in the NFL. It's so stupid.
The great part about the NFL is parity, and you said it last week when we were running through the schedule. We're judging... We use 2021 standards to look at 2022 schedule, and something's going to happen. Teams that we expect to be good aren't going to be good, and teams we expect to be bad are going to end up being good. How many people looked at their schedule last year, looked at the Cincinnati Bengals, and went, win? You know, there's going to be a team that surprises. So I heard a podcast over the weekend from a national show where a guy said exactly what I said. He said, you know what? I think the Rams have the Super Bowl hangover. I think they come down. I bet they're a middle-of-the-road team this year, a 500-type team. That was somebody else on the national scene said that. So, they could come down. Tampa, okay, we're just assuming Brady's back, whatever. Gronk hasn't said he's coming back. I mean, like, that team could take a step backwards. So, yeah, it's... And then the Detroits, the Chicagos, the Jacksonvilles, we're all assuming they're going to suck. But who knows? One of them could take a step.
And look, we talk about Cleveland, and what do we keep talking about? We've done it we've been guilty on it with this show. Oh, Deshaun Watson, the accusation. Cleveland went 8-9 last year. If Deshaun Watson's healthy and he's back to the Deshaun Watson that led the Texans to a 4-12 record, but if he puts up those type of numbers with Cleveland and the supporting cast that Cleveland has around him, Cleveland could be a true contender, but I can't speak for everybody else. When you have over a billion people in the world, you're going to have different opinions and predictions, but I'm not even thinking of Cleveland as far as a contender. I'm too caught up in the storyline. Cleveland's with Deshaun Watson healthy, that could be a good team. Yes. And he's winning the locker room. Look, I know a lot of the Deshaun Watson haters and cynics and people who believe without a doubt that he did what he was accused of. And I get it. If you believe it, then I see why you don't like him as an individual. But people who are wishing for him to fail, that locker room, they're behind him. When you take your entire team on a trip to, I don't know where he's...
Bahamas.
To the Bahamas...
Just the offense, though. He's not taking the defense.
Okay, well, when you take your offense to the Bahamas and you pay for that ticket, guess what? They're going to like you in the locker room. So he's winning those guys over. So
what's their itinerary look like in the Bahamas?
Work out on the beach for a couple of hours.
Massages.
Somebody's going to play. Somebody's going to throw out that joke. Hey, when are we going to get the massages, Deshaun? Are you going to pay for that?
I mean, it's what you do when you go to a resort, right?
He's going to have a handler in there with
I've never had a... massage.
You never had a massage on a trip?
No, I just always get them pre-game Thursday night.
Wait, Indy, I gotta ask you a question. You're telling me that in your whole 12-year NFL career, there was never a time where y'all looked on the schedule, well, I put it like this, during the season, and you looked at a team that may have been like, I don't know, let's say the 8th game of the season, and this team is like 1-6, and you're saying, these guys may, you know, these guys, we may be able to go in and not saying that you didn't say, I'm not going to play hard, but looked at the schedule and like, these guys are kind of like some non-competitors almost. You never looked at it that way?
No, because you look at every game, you expect to win. Like when we looked at the schedule coming out, like when the schedule would come out, wrong, right, or indifferent, we're like, oh, we're going to Atlanta. Cool. We get to go to Lenox Mall. Like
Magic City.
Oh, we're going to New York. My homeboy lives up there. Let me call him so he can come out to the game. But you're not looking at the schedule saying, oh, we're going to win this one, but we're going to lose this one.
During the season,
we're
going to
lose this. No, so you go into a game. Matter of fact, I would say it's the opposite. If you're going into a game week 8 or 9 and you're playing a team that's 1-7 or 2-6, you're saying, hey, don't fall for this trap. Matter of fact, if you have a good coach, if you have good coaches, they're showing the highlights of that team. They're showing the highlights of that team so you don't get too comfortable going into it.
So never looking ahead either? Not thinking that you may play a team that has a bad record in the first week and a good record in the second week?
You cannot look ahead. Like, I know it sounds cliche, but you truly, when you're in it, not a fan, when you're an actual player, when you're in it, it's truly one game at a time. Because you're watching hours upon hours of film per day. You're practicing on the team you're about to face. So if you're about to play, you know, just let's just say the New York Jets this upcoming week, and then after that you have the New England Patriots,
you're not looking past the Jets because everything you're doing is so focused on the Jets. Like we get a playbook for every single week. You know, you get a new playbook, so you can't overlook. And the players, again, I'm focused more on the players. They have more of a respect for the NFL and NFL teams than I think the fans do.
So it's just us fans that be out here talking trash, saying that this going to be an easy win or whatever.
Yeah, like I don't think any players. Now, there's games like, man, I can't believe we lost to that team. You know, they sucked. Their record's bad. I can't believe we lost to them. But going into it, that's the easiest way to get your ass beat.
We see that happen in college, though. What? Like, we hear college guys talk that trash all the time. Like, oh, yeah, this might as well be a bye week for us. We got it easy. Like,
I've never heard that.
There are guys who say that kind of stuff every now and then. Not the, you know, the Alabamas and those guys. They become conditioned to say, you know, it's the next game is the toughest game because it's the next game. Like, you know, there's people buy into that mantra. But every now and then you'll hear a college guy say, like, yeah, we expect to blow these guys. Why does that mantra go away in the pros?
Okay, because the pros, everybody's a pro. But when you have
Baylor, know you're facing an 0-15 team. That team sucks.
No, there aren't, because you know what makes the makeup of that 0-15 team? A bunch of All-Americans in college. A bunch of all-conference guys in college. Now, in college, when you have an FBS playing an FCS, again, if the coach is smart, he's like, hey, don't overlook these guys. Wink, wink. But we're going to go ahead and play the second and third team in the third quarter. But you can't compare college football to the NFL. There are only 32 NFL teams, and it's made up of the best football players in the world. College football, you have over 200 college teams when you talk FBS and FCS. So, yeah, when Baylor played TSU last year, they were highly outmatched. You know, they're overly outmatched, but that's not the same as Detroit playing the New England Patriots.
You think you ever been a part of a team where the other team overlooked you all?
And lost or won? Like, did they beat us?
Both. I guess both.
Ohio State beat us by 60 plus points. I don't think they're too worried about the Fighting Rice Owls. And you know what's crazy? We thought to a man we were going to win that game.
What about the NFL?
No, like the NFL, like I've never, in my 12 years, never been part of a team where we were going into it like, oh, this is going to be an easy win.
No, but you were the easy win. The other team is like, oh, yeah, we're going to just blow them out.
Oh, probably like when New England beat us when I was here in Houston. Like, when I looked into Tom Brady's eyes and he had no worries in the world, I was like, hey, aren't you concerned that we might get to you? He was just like, he was one of the coolest cats you'll ever meet. Like, he had his hands in his little hand warmer. He was in the huddle. Everything was so robotic, but it wasn't even intense. He was just picking us apart. And I was like, hey, man, show some emotion. Like, be happy that you just threw that touchdown. Don't act like you knew you were going to do it. All right, quick timeout. We'll get back to the calls, back to the discussion in the trenches, only on Sports Talk 790.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Roll tight, got spray behind. I hit the highway. Making money to fly away. But it's got to be a bad way.
Welcome in, welcome back. I did not realize last segment, if you've been patiently waiting in the trenches, your voice will be heard. Let's go to that southeast side. I'm going to guess South Union, sunny side, and talk to Randall. What's going on, Randall? Randall going once.
Oh, hello.
What's going on, Randall? We can hear you now, brother.
Hey, ain't nothing. I've been going back and forth on whether or not to purchase tickets to the Texans-Cleveland game. If they go ahead and tell us what they're going to do, I'll go ahead and purchase my tickets. Let's fill the seats in NRG Stadium. And, hey, it's going to be a rumble.
Tell me this.
And I'm wearing my jersey. Uh-huh.
What do you need to hear? Like, do you need to hear that he won't be suspended? Then you'll go ahead and purchase the tickets?
Well, whether they suspend him or not, I want to make sure that they're not going to suspend him for the Cleveland game. But I think that they shouldn't suspend him at all. I don't know what happened with Roethlisberger's suspension or what, if you want to hit on that, because I don't know if he got suspended or not. But if he's not found guilty in the courts, let him play.
All right. Appreciate the call. Real life fan who actually has money on the line waiting to see what the NFL is going to do before he makes his purchase. Let's head out to Pearland and talk to our good buddy, Joseph. What's up, Joseph?
Yes, how y'all doing this time?
Good, how are you?
Fine. Listen, you know, the Gamblers lost the last player of the game two times in a row. And, of course, I had an interesting situation this morning I wanted to pass on to you. I was drinking my coffee and reading the newspaper, and a guy walked up to me and asked me, do you think that Dallas Stars have a chance of hockey? But you're not going for a loop. They have not been watching. I've been hanging up the shoes. So.
We lost them. Somebody asked him about the Dallas hockey Stars? Team, Dallas Stars. Yeah, I'm not even looking that up. That's Joseph, that's my play uncle.
He comes out of left field sometimes.
But I'm not, no. I'm glad he brought the Gambler.
He was reference. All up on the Gamblers,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I didn't know whether they won or lost yesterday.
A lot of the people who, matter of fact, you gave me a incredulous look, Big Sarge, when I said I'm enjoying the product on the field with the USFL except for the offensive line. I notice a big difference with the lack of ability of the offensive linemen. Other than that, like, without looking at the stands, you know, without looking at the, you know, without trying to compare it to the NFL, that would be silly. Like, it would just be silly to try to compare it. I like the product.
I think he was talking about the Dallas Stars lost in game 7 of their first round in the playoff, NHL playoffs.
Yeah, I don't care what he was talking about with hockey.
The Gamblers are dead last, by the way, in the South Division. They are 1-4 behind the Bandits, Breakers, and Stallions.
I've seen one play from the Gamblers, and that was yesterday as we were walking out heading to an event, and I don't know who they was playing. All I seen was a big hit, and then the flag came, which should have been an actual clean hit, but that was it. I was like, ooh, big hit. I was like, who is this team? Oh, it's the Gamblers. Yeah, so I kept walking.
Can I throw something at you guys real quick? Something as I was show prepping this morning, and I came across, I knew Sarge would enjoy this story. Jerry Jones, who bought the Cowboys in 1989, do you remember how much he bought it for? $150 million in 1989. He estimated in a conversation with Peter Keegan and NBC Sports that he could get more than $10 billion if he sold them today. However, Jerry said, I'll say it definitively. I will never do it. I will never, ever sell the Cowboys. Should Jerry sell the Cowboys $10 billion? Like, come on.
I wouldn't. I mean, that the Cowboys is a cash cow. They're going to deliver you profits every year, no matter what their record is on the field.
But wouldn't he make the life for Steven and all of his kids and his grandkids way more easier to just,
what?
You know,
let's
what?
Sell it.
Steven's, let's take the $10 billion.
Jerry Jones' kids and grandkids are going to be okay, even if they don't sell the Cowboys.
But like, Steven's probably stressing him out, always prepping for the draft, always making all these big decisions. Dude, go live on a beach for the rest of your life with your family.
Why? Like, he enjoys
$10 billion.
He's worth over $8 billion, so his lifestyle's not going to change. If he wanted to, remember 2 years ago when they made their draft pick, Jerry Jones was stunting real hard. He made his draft pick from a yacht. Like, he has the best of both worlds. People get up and they get excited about going to work still. Like, that's one of the best jobs to have, an owner of an NFL football team, especially if you have a football background like Jerry Jones does. I mean, he played college football at a high level. He made some moves when he first purchased the Dallas Cowboys that people didn't like, but it resulted in Super Bowls. He's respected as a football guy, and he owns one of 32 football teams. He shouldn't sell it.
I love what I do here. It does not feel like work. If iHeart came to me tomorrow and said, we'll give you $1 billion to retire right now, see ya.
Yeah, but Jerry Jones is already worth
a
billion.
I think you're a little bit of a different position, Chris.
Yeah.
But like, those guys.
I'm not going to ask you your net worth, but.
Not that much.
Yeah.
you're probably 80 times what I'm worth. No, but like, think about it. Like, Stephen Jones, like, he stresses himself out. He's always, like, you're running a business day to day and all that.
Chris,
this
is a
buyout.
You
wouldn't have to run the business anymore.
Okay, what are you going to do?
Stress free.
What are you going to do?
You don't have to do anything. $10 billion in the bank.
Chris, you're missing the point when it comes to, you're missing the point when it comes to Jerry Jones. It ain't about the money. It's about the power.
I'm talking about after Jerry. Jerry knows he's not much longer on this world.
Powerful.
Look, Steven is more power hungry than Jerry. He's trying. Look, he's actually trying to find a way to push his old man out the door so he can go ahead and take over. So, no, it's the power for Jerry Jones, not the money. You think about it, he's the most revered owner in the league. Everybody knows who he is everywhere he goes. That's what it is for him, not the $10 billion.
All I'm saying is, Cal, if somebody comes to you and says, we will buy the Texans for $1 billion or several billion dollars, take it. Hey, get out, Cal. Stress-free. Shout out to work another day.
Shout out to the Houston Texans 10th annual Texans Volunteer Day they had out there. It was really good. I got a chance to, you know, talk with Nico Collins, Roy Lopez, Johnson.
Talk to Cal?
Yeah, we talked to Cal and Hannah. It was really good. So
I enjoy your coverage, Sarge.
I'll tell you what. Shout out to the McNairs to be billionaires and be out there at 8 in the morning helping clean up the YMCA.
I was in my bed and I saw pictures of ND out there planting trees.
I'll be like, hey, send somebody else on my behalf. That's going to do it for us today. God willing, same time, same place tomorrow in the trenches, exclusively on Sports Talk 790. Down in the big old range. I knew it when I rocked big old chains. Not a little doing big old things. Would you look at that? I came back for it just to get to you.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.